Indian-run casinos, revenues up 3% to $35.6 billion, nearly $8 billion paid in taxes to state and local governments. Americans spending more in commercial casinos last year than on movies, music, and outdoor equipment combined, though it's still far less than we spend on electronics and cable TV. The biggest increases in new gaming states, a more than 400% jump for Maryland's two casinos in their first full year of operation. Atlantic City with the biggest drop in revenues, thanks to the rising market in neighboring Pennsylvania. Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
The Heat are hot in the NBA playoffs, beating and eliminating the Knicks.
When we got that lead, was up 55-44 at half, and we just tried to bump it up, keep bumping up, and, you know, make them have to call the timeout, make them have to readjust.
LeBron James in Miami won game 5-106-94, advancing to the second round. The Memphis Grizzlies won to stay alive, beating the Clippers 92-80, but LA still leads the series 3-2. In hockey, the Capitals beat the Rangers to force a game 7. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD4, New Rochelle.
The most innovative and groundbreaking local transportation service is now here. The Green Team Cab Corporation in New Rochelle. The one and only Green Team Cab Corporation features all new 2011 super luxurious hybrid cars that really make you feel like you're being driven in style and comfort. The Green Team is perfect for all your corporate needs. A trip to the airport or just a ride anywhere locally. Call Brian Herbie or Mr. O'Mara today at the Green Team Cab Corporation in New Rochelle for a new kind of luxury transportation experience second to none. We love the Green Team and you will too. 914-576-1200 in New Rochelle, 576-1200. Credit cards accepted in the car, no minimums, no forced gratuity. 576-1200, the Green Team, now the most innovative and superior way to travel. The Green Team, saving the planet one ride at a time.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. We have this frontal system slowly trudging through the area. A satellite image shows most of the cloud cover from this system. Now extends from central New England right down to the eastern seaboard and then just off the coast of the southeast states. Big area of high pressure is building in from the Ohio Valley. It's going to be with us commencing later today and lasting probably right up through Sunday. We may see a return to some more moist weather and the possibility of some occasional rain and showers by later Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. But until then, our trend will be towards some nice May weather. It'll be morning clouds and maybe a shower, then sunshine. High temperatures for the day, rains into the upper 60s today. Clear to partly cloudy for tonight. Overnight lows in the mid-40s. It'll be sunny, breezy on Friday with Friday's highs right around 70. Clear skies at night in the upper 40s. Saturday features sunshine, low 70s. And Sunday partly sunny, but cloudy over late in the day and at night with a chance of some showers later Sunday on Mother's Day. High temperatures will reach the lower 70s, back to a chance of showers on Monday. Monday's highs, lower 70s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
Hello, New York. This is Bill O'Shaughnessy, and this is the spot. This is the place on the radio dial. Welcome once more to your own WVOX, the most influential station in New York State, for you and yours. A labor of love every day, I can tell you, and every night at 1460 and WVOX.com. Now broadcasting all over the world.
WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, May 10th, 2012, the 52nd day of spring. It is 10:09 and 44 seconds in the morning. It's a spring day, a little bit overcast but a little bit cool, but it's definitely a spring day. We've gained 2 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 31 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 5:42 this morning. It will set at 8:01 this evening. We will have 14 hours and 19 minutes of daylight today. The moon will set in about an hour at 11:12, an hour and 2 minutes this morning. Then it will rise again at 1:15 tomorrow morning. We are 2 days short of last quarter, four past full moon. The next full moon is June 4th, and the last full moon, of course, was that dramatic magic moon, I think they called it. Last Sunday was the perigee. Here it is, the perigee, which was the day of the month when the moon is nearest to the Earth. As it coincided with the full moon, it provided quite a celestial light show if you were in an area with a clear sky. Unfortunately, around here it was overcast, so we were denied that show. The apogee, which is the furthest spot that the moon gets from the Earth all year, occurs a week from Sunday, May 19th. I don't quite understand that, but there it is. Okay, next high tides in New Rochelle at 3:43 this afternoon, in Yonkers at 1:55, Tarrytown 2:39, Haverstraw 3:05, and in Peekskill 3:18 p.m. Now a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Sergeant Jacob M. Schwally, age 22, of Clarksville, Tennessee. He was with the 82nd Airborne. One of three soldiers killed by a roadside bomb in Ghazni province on May 7th, just 3 days ago. The other two were Private First Class Dustin D. Gross, 19, of Jeffersonville, Kentucky, and Chase S. Marta, age 24, of Chico, California. Now, those three were alive 3 days ago. They were killed on the 7th. Today is the 10th. That would be Monday. Staff Sergeant Thomas Kent Fogarty, age 30, of Alameda, California, with the 25th Infantry, was killed by a roadside bomb in Paktia Province on May 6th. That would be Sunday. Sergeant John Patrick Hewling, age 25, of Westchester, Ohio. He was with the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, killed when he was shot by an individual wearing an Afghan National Army uniform in Helmand Province on May 6th. The individual who shot him was killed in return by our guys. Master Sergeant Gregory Lamont Child, age 38, of Warren, Arkansas. He was with the headquarters company of Defense Logistics Agency, died in Kabul on May 4th. He died. And Staff Sergeant Zachary H. Hargrove, age 32, of Wichita, Kansas, with the 1st Infantry, died after being found unresponsive at Bagram Airfield on May 3rd. Just note that both of those died, were not killed, and we'll address that in a moment. Captain Bruce Kevin Clark, age 43, of Spencerport, New York, assigned to the William Beaumont Army Medical Center, deployed with the 566th Air Support Medical Company. He died in Tarin Kaut, Afghanistan, on May 1st. Sergeant Nicholas M. Dickott, age 23, of Rochester, Minnesota, with the 2nd Infantry, killed by small arms fire in Kandahar Province on April 30th. Master Sergeant Scott E. Pruitt, age 38, of Gautier, Mississippi, with the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, killed by roadside bomb in combat in Helmand Province, April 28th. Private First Class Christian R. Sanicolas, age 20, of Anaheim, California, with the 82nd Airborne, killed by a roadside bomb in Ghazni Province, April 28th. Lieutenant Christopher E. Mosco, age 28, of Pittsford, New York. He was assigned to the Combined Joint Special Operations Task Force. He was with the Navy, killed along with two Army guys, two soldiers, by a roadside bomb in Ghazni Province on April 26th, and those two soldiers were Staff Sergeant Brandon Forrest Eggleston, age 29, of Candler, North Carolina. He was with the 3rd Special Forces Group. And Sergeant Dick A. Lee, Jr., age 31, of Orange Park, Florida. He was with the 18th Military Police Brigade. And our last fellow today is Specialist Jason K. Edens, age 22, of Franklin, Tennessee. He was with 1st Armor. He was wounded by small arms fire in Lagman Province on April 15th, died of his wounds in Bethesda, Maryland, at the National Naval Medical Center on April 26. These 15 American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Now, there have been more suicides, 28 in March, if I read it correctly, just in 1 month. More suicides among active duty military personnel in America's Middle East wars in recent years than at any other time in history, and more died from suicide than were killed in combat. I don't quite get that. Perhaps in former wars there was a sense of purpose which does not exist today. Wars in the past had objectives, land objectives. You fought for a hill, a street, a town, a village, a city, something. Today you go into the country and you fight skirmishes day after day with neither political nor military objectives being met. And that would be my guess. That just seems so frustrating, and you're under such pressure being in the military and in a combat zone that it's just too much. Doesn't matter. Americans are being killed overseas, whether by the enemy's hands or their own. Is it nobler to die in combat? Ask the families of those men and women who come home in the baggage compartment of an airplane. Which is more important? Lieutenant Mosco and Sergeants Eggleston and Lee were killed on that very day, 2 weeks ago, on the day of our last broadcast. And this reminds us that American soldiers and our allies are in peril and might be dying at this very moment, at any moment. Please keep them in your thoughts. Don't forget, we have men dying and women dying overseas for us. Count your blessings. These 15 men can no longer do that, nor can their loved ones anytime soon. I've got time for the Culture Corner. We may run out of time in the middle of this, but this is my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions. You have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong. Hairspray at the Westchester Broadway Theater, May 4th, at the Westchester Broadway Theater. That was a gas. Originally, it was a 1988 film by John Waters. The 2002 Broadway production won 8 Tony Awards. The story, chubby girl competes with Miss Perfect for a spot on a TV show. You can guess what happens in this predictable yarn, but it is not the story particularly which makes this play work. In post-performance interviews, the actors describe their experience as a party to which they are happy to welcome the audience. Now, that attitude can make a bad play, which this is not, work. It also speaks to the artistry of director Richard Stafford, who also choreographed, beautiful to watch, expertly crafted, to use the WBT's considerable stage size. Acting was quite good all around. The standout for me was Scott Calcagno, who plays multiple roles, high school principal, Mr. Pinky, Harriman Spritzer. It was his creation of the principal role that was the standout, and I enjoyed that role. That was worth the price of admission right there. It is the message of the play, which is the star after all the singing and dancing and drama. The message, very current in 1962, is integration, equal opportunity, social acceptance, and Hairspray delivers this message with humor and compassion, and that makes it a classic. Male actor in drag as Chubby Tracy's mother, that role was played by Harvey Fierstein, Divine, and, are you ready for this, John Travolta, in the past is campy and funny, but again, it's the message. There are some off-color jokes, but don't hesitate to bring the young'uns. They won't get them. People under 40, maybe even 50, will miss some of the references. Jackie Gleason, Eddie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds, Teen Angel, a song about a tragic death of a young teen girl. I guess there are still Midol and Geritol, but these seem dated references as well. Okay, there's more, but I think you get it. If you like musicals, definitely come to the WBT in Elmsford. This production ends on June 3rd. So don't drag your feet. The Westchester Broadway Theater's new policy is to have more productions and fewer performances of each. Okay, in the minute we have left, we also saw a concert at the Westchester Philharmonic Orchestra. Last Saturday was an all Mendelssohn concert at Iona College by the Westchester Philharmonic Orchestra. As usual, a solid performance by a very good classical group. I don't particularly care for Felix Mendelssohn's music, but his Italian Symphony is great, and that's the piece that was on this program. The concert opened with a mercifully short, boring piece. Felix Mendelssohn was 12 when he wrote it, but still. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are... Well, we're running out of time. Wherever you're listening, this is WVOX. I am Bob Levinsohn. We'll be back with my guest, Kara Rogers, in just a minute.
News at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, Wall Street is kicking off the trading day in a sea of green. A round of better-than-expected reports on the U.S. economy is pushing stocks higher. At 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow is up about 80 points with green arrows across the board. Shares of News Corp are on the rise after posting better-than-expected third-quarter results. Profit for the company jumped more than 40% from a year ago, thanks in part to higher earnings at its cable TV networks. Revenue also topped analyst estimates, and the company announced it's doubling its stock buyback program to $10 billion. News Corp is the parent of the Fox Business Network. And beauty products maker Coty is raising its offer for Avon by 6.5%. With the backing of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, the offer now stands at nearly $10.7 billion, but Coty says it will withdraw its offer if Avon doesn't enter into discussions by May 14th. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Diane Macedo.
Hi, I'm a home. You know where your heart is? Don't worry, I know how you feel about me. That's why you need to get me flood insurance. If you get homesick after a few days, imagine how a flood would make you feel. Just a few inches of water can cost tens of thousands of dollars in damage. And homeowners insurance doesn't cover floods. But in moderate to low risk areas, flood insurance starts as low as $129 a year. Visit floodsmart.gov to learn how a flood could affect you.
Ways of making you talk.
Well, okay, hotshot.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
We are back. I'd just like to finish that review of the Westchester Philharmonic Orchestra. As I said, Felix Mendelssohn was 12 when he wrote this, the opening piece. It was mercifully short because it was boring. Felix Mendelssohn was just 12 years old when he wrote it, but still, even a good orchestra like the Westchester Philharmonic is composed of musicians, not alchemists. No one can make boring interesting. Then there was the violin concerto. Friedrich Nietzsche ranked it among the four great German violin concerti. That's ridiculous. World-renowned violinist Elmar Oliveira turned in a virtuoso performance for sure. He's great. But the music, while sweet at times, seemed redundant and more flowery than melodic, and the flowers were neither roses nor lilacs. If I want repetitive, I'll go with Bach fugues, which have that quality, but they have a lot more substance to them. The ultimate, of course, is in redundancy, is Ravel's Bolero, but it somehow works in spite of itself. It's a beautiful piece, even though it's the same theme over and over and over again. Just changes it up a bit. So let me nitpick just a bit for this concert. Microphones were placed in front of the stage on long, intrusive stands. It didn't affect the music, but all performances are visual as well as audible, and they put up a visual barrier to the audience. Whatever intimacy would have existed did not because of this. We were not a unit. They were them, and we were us. Now, there are other little things, but one nit is enough for today. Founder and conductor Barry Charles Hoffman is both conservative and flamboyant, seemingly oxymoronic, but believable in both roles. He takes his music very seriously, while at the same time displaying great passion. He is a conductor to be reckoned with. Now, the couple of things that I would... I was expecting to hear from the Riverkeeper, did not. They have a hearing at Indian Point. You're going to have to look that up and do a little more research on your own. They were going to talk about it, but they didn't get back to me, so that can't happen. But it's this month, I believe, in a week or so, that there will be a hearing about the possible relicensing of Indian Point. So that is imminent. I'd also like to say some things about Mariano Rivera and the Yankees, but there's no time for that. And, of course, President Obama's pronouncement that he supports gay marriage is big in the news. I'm sure many other of my colleagues will be talking about that. Okay, my guest today is Kara Rogers. She is author of a book called Out of Nature, subtitled Why Drugs from Plants Matter to the Future of Humanity. Speaking to us from Chicago, welcome Kara Rogers.
Bob, thanks for having me.
Good morning. It's absolutely my pleasure. We'll be on for about 5 minutes, and then we'll come back after the break. Tell me, how's the weather in Chicago today?
You know, it's in the 50s and sunny, so I call that good.
Yeah, I think it's probably about that. It's not completely sunny. It's kind of partly sunny here, but I guess we're experiencing similar weather. You don't have any tornadoes, and we don't have any hurricanes, so I guess we're on the same page. your book talks about basically relationships, as I see it, among workers like lumbermen and so forth, and environmentalists who try to protect the environment, and pharmaceutical companies and the medical industry, which is trying to create drugs and other substances that are of benefit to humans, and they kind of clash. Now, some years ago, the northern spotted owl was all in the newspaper, and nobody really understood, well, why are you trying to save some species, this spotted owl? Who cares about a spotted owl? But it's really more complex if you get to understand it. Why don't you fill us in on what the spotted owl's role was in the cancer drug industry and in the preservation of old-growth forests, including the Pacific yew?
Sure. Well, you know, this all kind of started back in the 1980s when scientists really became interested in studying a chemical that had been isolated from the bark of the Pacific yew tree. And the Pacific yew grows in the Pacific Northwest, which for many decades has been a hot seat for environmentalists, primarily because of logging and the timber industry there. And it had been known in the 1980s that the northern spotted owl had become endangered because much of its habitat was being cleared from logging. And so when Taxol, which is the compound that was isolated from the bark of the yew, came along and environmentalists learned that the compound was being isolated from the bark in the owl's habitat, which was also then being threatened by logging still, a heated debate arose. So it wasn't just logging, it was now the pharmaceutical industry coming in and taking great interest in these trees because Taxol was, as far as anti-cancer drugs were concerned, it was a very promising candidate. So you had the yews, the spotted owl, and then you had the logging industry and the pharmaceutical industry all kind of competing for the same habitat there. And fortunately, much of the land there is now protected within the Olympic National Park area, but that still doesn't really prevent people from going in and seeking what they want. So for the yew, it was a kind of complicated story that started much earlier with the discovery of the compound. But for many decades, actually, the scientists didn't know the structure of the compound very well, and they weren't able to synthesize it. And that's eventually the interest grew despite the difficulties. And in the 1980s, there was great interest in researching this compound. So it was still being harvested from the bark. But the problem became kind of engrossed in this cancer versus owl debate. Was it more important to save the owl or more important to save people from dying?
Yeah,
cancer.
Well, that was the buzzword, owl versus people from dying. But really, break it down a little bit. Once all the ewes were harvested and then presumably killed, then what? Then there'd still be no jobs for lumberjacks.
Right.
So, is it now? My understanding is it wasn't really a sustainable resource at all. You could have harvested all of the yew trees, but I think you get one dose per tree. I mean, how many millions of doses before there's no more tree, and then we're back to square one. But you don't have that chemical.
Exactly.
So we're gonna have to do this after the break. But I'd like to know at what point the pharmaceutical industry can synthesize a substance like this that will. That will treat people with cancer, and at what point the yew becomes an extinct species. So we'll come back and we'll discuss that in just a moment. Please hold. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Green Bank, West Virginia, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Mount Shasta or Chino, California, Yantis, Texas, Dyer, Indiana, Lock Haven, Pennsylvania, Coon Rapids or St. Paul, Minnesota, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. I am Bob Lebensold. This program is Environmentally Sound. My guest today is Kara Rogers, author of Out of Nature, Why Drugs from Plants Matter to the Future of Humanity. Again, WVOX AM 1460, Bob Lebensold, Environmentally Sound, and we will be right back.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. They're getting into it in Congress over to how to cut federal debt.
Let us cut the subsidies. Let us cut the subsidies for those who are sending the jobs overseas. Let us cut the agriculture subsidies for people who don't plant anything. Do not cut the food stamp program.
Gentlelady from Connecticut will suspend.
Democratic Congresswoman LaRosa DeLauro of Connecticut and Republican Rob Woodall of Georgia. The House is debating how to alter $100 billion in automatic spending cuts January 1st. Republicans want to prevent big reductions in defense. Democrats don't want them for health care and social programs. In Syria, at least 55 people are reported dead and nearly 400 more wounded from two suicide bombings in Damascus, the deadliest attack since violence escalated last year. No claims of responsibility yet. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 39 points. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Our community programs are brought to you today by Young & Bartlett, Westchester's leading law firm for negligence, personal injury cases, and medical malpractice. Relying on 55 years of legal experience, partner Francis X. Young and his legendary father before him have been great advocates recovering millions of dollars for those unfortunate individuals who were injured in any way, including victims of medical malpractice, construction job site accidents, motor vehicle accidents, or defective products. Young & Bartlett are actual trial attorneys who stand right up for you and your rights in the courtroom. Partner Mayo Bartlett of this top-notch firm also specializes in civil rights cases and criminal defense. Calling on his many years as assistant DA under famed crime fighters Carl Vergari and Janine Pirro. Today, Young & Bartlett is at 81 Main Street in White Plains at Lexington, two blocks from Metro North. Attorneys Frank Young and Mayo Bartlett. Two great lawyers, two dedicated advocates. Check them out at young-bartlett.com or by calling 914-285-1500.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Our weather forecast for today, we start off with a chance of a shower, then becoming mostly sunny. High temperatures for the day will range in the upper 60s, northwest winds, a bit gusty, 15 to 25, gusting to 35 this afternoon. Fair to partly cloudy for this evening, clearing up overnight in the mid-40s. Sunny and breezy on Friday. Friday's highs right near 70, clear at night in the upper 40s. The weekend looks pretty nice. Saturday, sunshine, lower 70s. Sunday, back to partial sunshine. A late day or evening shower or thunder shower. High temperatures in the mid-70s on Sunday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
No matter when you listen.
I put on the radio when I'm getting ready.
We keep it on at work.
We're the station you can count on. VOX.
We are back. This is Bob Lebensold. We're on environment. Well, let me start that again. This is Bob Lebensold, Environmentally Sound. My guest today is Kara Rogers. Are you back with us, Kara?
I am.
Okay. We're talking about the complex relationship among environmentalists, spotted owls, yew trees, cancer patients, the medical and pharmaceutical industries, and what did I leave out? The labor. So now I think, as we've discussed, I think this is a valid debate. If you have a potential drug, Taxol, that can actually help cancer patients, can save lives, how do you balance that against the life of an owl? Now, I'm sympathetic to all life, not just species, but individuals among those species. Taking a life is taking a life, regardless. However, I'm also sympathetic to cancer patients who would like to get whatever drugs are available. Then again, we run into running out of resources. So these trees could be driven to extinction, basically. Okay, so at what point, this was really the question, at what point does the pharmaceutical industry get to synthesize whatever it is in the yew tree from just chemicals so that it's no longer necessary to harvest the tree? Thank you to the tree very much for providing the insight, but now we got it. So you can go live your life and we'll just make this stuff.
Well, it wasn't quite that simple.
Do tell.
The process of synthesizing chemicals, especially replicating ones from nature, is extremely complicated. And in the case of Taxol, they weren't even able to elucidate the structure of the compound for many years. And then in the late 1980s, I think it was, there was a U.S. scientist who actually decided to start looking at the needles of the yew tree, because it was becoming apparent that much progress that they were hoping wasn't going to be made as far as, like, the debate between the owl and the tree, and there was too much tension and too much controversy, and it was kind of stalling progress. So one scientist here in the U.S. decided to look at the needles, and he identified a compound that was actually quite similar to the compound of interest in the tree's bark. And he developed a semi-synthetic technique. So basically using the renewable resource of the needles and taking that and adding some chemical side groups to it and essentially producing the same compound. So that was the solution. And it was fortunate, because we didn't really come to the point of having to decide which was more important.
So is this a success story?
This is a success story. This is probably one of the most told. It's a classic story in pharmacology of how nature and science basically came together and met their differences, I suppose.
So now the yew tree is no longer being challenged.
Right.
As far as its existence is concerned, the spotted owl goes merrily along.
Right.
People
exactly.
The people who cut down trees are not cutting down trees, but I presume they've been repurposed to harvest needles, I guess.
For that.
So it's win-win-win all around, and cancer patients are getting better.
Yes, exactly.
So that's really cool. Now, let's jump for a moment. We can always come back to this, but let's jump to Peru. And another drug you talk about is a drug. Let's see if I got this. It's a natural drug which was used in the treatment of glaucoma, but that was over-harvested, as I gather, and governments have supported the farmers in growing more of this shrub or whatever it is. However, the plant has lost some of its, it's kind of a regressive evolution. It's gone backwards, and it's a less rich plant. So talk about that, and then let's go into that same progression. If and when this drug is synthesized successfully, now what about the farmers who are being subsidized, and do you have to put them out of business also? So why don't you just, I've rambled a little bit, but try to infer some questions from there.
Sure. The name of the drug is pilocarpine, and it was actually first isolated in the late 19th century from a plant that grows in South America. And it's pretty interesting because the plant had been used locally by an indigenous group, and they had known of, you know, medicinal benefits for a while, and they had used it for all sorts of purposes. But as soon as the pharmaceutical developers realized that it had medicinal purposes that, you know, could be used in a conventional system of medicine, they started harvesting it more intensely. And so this plant, which was abundant, is now today far less abundant, and it's changed. And that's largely because there seems to have been no pursuit of developing this compound synthetically like there was with Taxol. I think there was a realization with Taxol that, you know, there was a finite resource. With the source for pilocarpine, it's a little different, whether it's because it's in South America and it's a little known species and there's not a spotted owl there to protect the existence of the plant. It's been continually harvested. In recent decades now, the pharmaceutical companies have gone to the local peoples and have initiated plantation development for this plant's cultivation. But the plant, as you had mentioned, has actually changed. And part of that is through indigenous peoples harvesting certain size leaves from the plants. The plants over time have actually evolved smaller leaves.
So let's just analogize that so perhaps people can understand that. If you overfish a species that is very big and you get all the big ones, pretty soon there are no more big ones. So let's just take tuna as an example. Tuna maybe used to be hundreds of pounds, 1,000 pounds, and now maybe they're 3/4 of that or half of that, and you can't find any more big ones. Is it kind of like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is
so
exactly like
so
that.
These leaves have been over-harvested, and the plant's struggling to survive. They now they're happy with the smaller leaves because at least they survive. Something like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Good.
And then compounding that is just they are fewer in the wild. So. It's very different to cultivate a plant and to find that plant in the wild. It's a wild species has its naturally evolved genetic constitution. A plant that is now being cultivated by humans will inevitably change, much the way that harvesting the leaves selectively has actually changed the...
I don't quite get that. If they take the plant and they grow it on a plantation, I presume they would harvest it in a way that would maintain its integrity. Am I wrong about that?
They would, but they're probably still continuing to harvest those plantation plants even selectively in a way, maybe selecting larger plants or selecting plants with larger leaves. So inevitably, it's almost like a domestication process, you could think of it, but they're actually in a way kind of helping the pharmaceutical companies, maybe by selecting plants that actually are producing larger quantities of the substance that's desired.
Mm-hmm.
But the situation is complicated, of course, because by going in and establishing these plantations, the pharmaceutical companies are, of course, offering livelihoods to the locals. But there's, of course, also pursuit of developing this compound synthetically or semi-synthetically, which could ultimately, in the end, compromise those livelihoods, maybe taking them away in some respects. And one reason why I discuss this in the book is because it really points to diversification in a sense. The pharmaceutical companies are helping, but they also need to help in I guess, a more holistic way, not just providing the livelihoods, but also helping the people there realize, like, through diversification, maybe they can grow other crops. So it's not just farming that one plant. They would be supporting a community because that community is supporting them. Diversification in drug development is, I would say, one of the more interesting and more problematic things of late for the industry. Basically, they've been, instead of going to nature and isolating new compounds, which in the early part of the 20th century was kind of a big endeavor, especially in the United States. The National Cancer Institute had a whole drug screening program where they screened thousands of compounds from natural sources. Eventually, that program was shut down in the 1980s because it was a huge effort to actually continue the screening, and the percentage of compounds that were actually being picked up by pharmaceutical companies and pursued was relatively small. But as a result of cutting out those types of screening.
No, go ahead.
As I say, as a result of cutting out those types of screening programs, they've basically cut down the diversification process, so they're now focusing on a narrower set of compounds.
Okay, let's break there. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Batman, Ankara, or Istanbul, Turkey, 1770, Queensland, Australia, Bat Yam or Tel Aviv, Israel, Brown Willie or Christmas Pie, England, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. And you are listening live. I am Bob Levinsold. My guest is Kara Rogers. And we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The issue of gay marriage in the spotlight as President Obama takes a position.
The president endorsed same-sex marriage, but from a personal perspective. In an interview with Good Morning America's Robin Roberts, he did not promise federal action to impose gay marriage.
Historically, this has not been a federal issue.
The issue now creates a clear difference with Republican Mitt Romney.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz. In the John Edwards criminal trial, the prosecution wrapping up its case today.
They plan to call some federal agents to the stand, but they will not be calling Edwards' mistress. Rielle Hunter is not on the prosecution's list of witnesses for Thursday, but could still be called by the defense later in the trial. Although she is central to the case, some legal analysts say it's hard to predict whether Hunter as a witness would help or hurt the prosecution.
Fox's Jonathan Sarian. Mortgage rates falling to fresh record lows. 3.83 for a 30-year fixed loan. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Did you know the staff of life, bread, adds more sodium to the average American's diet than any other single food? And here's the reason. As a nation, we eat bread far more often than any other food. Soundshore Medical Center encourages you to choose breads lower in salt. Remember, foods don't have to be salty to taste delicious, and less salt is healthier. And over time, your taste buds adjust to less being more.
Hi, I'm Tom Merriam. Join Bill Meth and me this Saturday morning at 8 o'clock here on WVOX 1460 AM as the 10th anniversary season of the Metro Golf Show continues. This week, we'll preview the upcoming Sybase Match Play Championship where the best women's players in the world will compete. We'll also tell you how you can become a virtual PGA player competing against the best men's players in the world. In honor of Mother's Day, Diamond Links will feature a Major League Baseball star whose mom was once Nancy Lopez's top rival on the links. Plus the Bridgestone Golf Tip of the Week, and another stop on the Metro Golf Show Tour. You'll get all that and even more this Saturday and every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock on what the New York Daily News calls the best local radio show covering golf, the Metro Golf Show, on WVOX 1460 and WVOX.com, so tune us in before you tee off. The Metro Golf Show is sponsored in part by Barbados Tourism, Bridgestone Golf, the Paramount Country Club, and the Sybase Match Play Championship.
When's the best time to listen?
I listen morning, noon, and night constantly.
The correct answer is anytime. WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. And if you're listening in all of the other wonderful, exotic places of this great planet, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. Kara Rogers is my guest. Her book is Out of Nature, Why Drugs from Plants Matter to the Future of Humanity. Kara, the title Out of Nature it's a dual meaning. It means what we get from nature, and it also means how we have detached from nature in some way. Am I right in reading it that way?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. And you've cited E.O. Wilson, the great biologist,
mm-hmm.
And I think he's essentially a myrmecologist, but so much more, meaning for those who don't know that highfalutin language, he's an ant scientist. He talks about something, and you talk about it in your book, called
biophilia,
which means we all have an innate love of nature. And I question that. I mean, I don't question that it's innate. I think it's in our bones and in our genes. But I think probably some people who have grown to love the urban environment or to thrive, let us say, in the urban environment, have no clue what to do. And it's like if the activity stops, if the running around, the clubbing, the shopping, the styles and fashion, if you just put out in shorts or jeans in the middle of a forest, it'll be more frightening than comfortable. Now, you, I presume, and me, I know, if you put me in the middle of a forest, I could just stay there. I like to get very silent and listen to even the worms crawling in the earth and the grubs, and you know, I love the sounds, and it just makes me feel much more alive. So speak about biophilia, what Wilson meant by it, what you mean by it, and about the disconnect that so many people seem to have with it.
Sure. Wilson basically talked about biophilia as the human attraction to nature and all living things. He liked to talk about it, I think, more in a social context, in the sense that, you know, we are part of nature, and so we, as a species, evolved in nature, and we have a love for these things that we evolved with. And out of nature, I use biophilia as basically to stimulate, I guess, some acknowledgement or just some interest in, yes, many of us go out into nature and we have these experiences and we become maybe emotionally engrossed in the experience.
And spiritually enriched.
Yes, exactly. And one of the reasons why I focus on this a bit is because the pharmaceutical industry as a whole has come out of nature in the sense that they aren't looking to nature anymore. So the substances, which originally were out of nature, aren't being discovered anymore. They aren't, pharmaceutical companies aren't investing in going and discovering these compounds. So they have become increasingly reliant on technology to develop synthetic compounds and to rely on human ingenuity, basically. But, of course, humans are the ones behind these companies, and the notion of being disconnected with nature is something, as you kind of alluded to, you know, people in a city who haven't been out in nature might forget what it's like, and
actually be scared by it.
And actually be scared by it.
By
yeah.
What actually, I mean, you're surrounded by life. Let me take another simple example. I'm perfectly comfortable. I don't like roaches in my house exactly, but I've studied them and water bugs and smaller roaches. And people are probably cringing who are listening, perhaps even you are, because it's one of those living creatures that we have been taught to loathe. But when you look at them, they're very elegant, just as grasshoppers are, to take a more neutral species, and cicadas and all the other ones, and butterflies. I mean, they're all basically the same. They're insects. Cockroaches are just a different kind of insect. And rats, people cringe. Rats and mice, people jump up on chairs. You know, but they're just little delicate, wonderful examples of either creation or evolution, whichever way you look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we benefit from science, and so we know these things, and we know that they won't harm us. Our science has told us, essentially. But of course, you could always get bit
some
by a rat. You could get stung by an insect, et cetera.
Well, some people are terrified by them. They think everybody carries disease. Well, they don't.
It would,
really?
Well, exactly.
It's not nice to get bitten by a rat, but it's not nice to get bitten by a dog or a snake or of another
right.
person either. In fact, it's probably more dangerous to get bitten by another person than any of these animals.
Right. I mean, nature has its own defenses, and we need to respect those. But, of course, for people who don't spend a lot of time in nature, it's really easy to kind of get sucked into, I guess, a more superstitious type of belief pattern.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, understanding, like, wolves just howl to communicate,
yes.
A wolf howling in the middle of the night could be a terrifying experience for someone who's never heard it before and doesn't understand what it is.
Or who has listened to the fairy tales where the wolves get Red Riding Hood and all those other characters. Wolves are devils.
Exactly.
But really, you know, dogs are wolves.
Well, and to be fair, as a species, we I think innately have an innate fear of certain things, and that's a survival strategy. I mean, if we weren't afraid of a grizzly bear standing on its hind feet in front of you, then, you know,
sure.
I mean, you obviously don't want to run, but at the same time, you know,
I don't know what
human.
You do.
It's human to feel that kind of thing.
I don't want to stand and fight with a grizzly. But by the same token, if a skunk is standing up and aiming at you, you want to get as far as you can, as quick as you can.
Right. And I think it's a matter of perspective, too. So understanding that grizzly bear plays an important role in the ecosystem in which it lives.
Okay, let me just call Debbie in on this. She made a face when I said... Wolves are basically dogs. Debbie's our engineer. Debbie, you made a face. What was that about?
Bob, is because I watch a show called Once Upon a Time on TV, and it's about the whole the little Red Riding Hood comment, because if you watch that show, you would understand why when it comes to the big bad wolf.
Well, I didn't watch the show, but do you not accept that dogs have been bred down from wolves?
I agree. It was just the comment on Little Red Riding Hood where I made the face about. Nothing to do with that.
Okay. All right, Kara, a couple of things. First of all, industries, you know, there's so much talk about how we you have to preserve jobs. You can't make a change because you got to preserve jobs. And that goes to, let's say, the military industrial complex, which General Dwight D. Eisenhower, general and president, cautioned us against in his departure speech. If an industry no longer serves, and if new technology has come up, like for instance the typewriter people, we don't still pay typewriter people to make typewriters because we don't need typewriters anymore. So presumably everybody who had a job in a typewriter company or had a typewriter business went out of business. If they were clever, they got other jobs or they created other things. But you can't preserve, like, say, lumberjacks. You can't say, oh, well, lumberjacks always have to be here. Well, if the trees are gone, they're not going to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so what do you do? But corporations have they're kind of lazy. They say, well, you know, we're making this obsolete stuff, but we're going to use our influence and lobby Congress and pay for their campaigns and all that so that we can keep making this stuff that we don't need. So what do you say about that?
I think there's some truth to that.
Some?
Yes, especially in the pharmaceutical industry. I think there's been a lot of technologies that have been developed in the late 20th century that are still being used today with the belief that they will produce the synthetic compounds that many have dreamt that they always will produce. But the reality is that they aren't. And so the industry is being forced to evolve, as you know, as any industry would, to adapt to either new technologies or realizations. Yeah. And one realization is, for example, antibiotics. We don't have as many effective antibiotics in the world today, largely because of the emergence of resistance to some of
There are other factors, for sure.
Yes, but as an example, many antibiotics come from natural sources, and the lack of initiatives, especially by the leaders in the industry, to go out and explore and find these compounds, and you know, they've just kind of been resting on their laurels.
Yeah, that's the point. We need that kind of creative spirit,
getting it from the pharmaceutical industry is extraordinarily difficult, and. Yeah. You know, they are distracted often by the bottom line,
right,
et cetera. And so much of the innovation and the discovery is coming from academia.
Well, we could discuss the economics and the politics of it forever, but unfortunately we've run out of time, Kara. It's been a pleasure. I've learned a lot, and I'd love to learn much more. I'm going to look at your book some more, and possibly we'll do it again.
Great. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Kara Rogers for joining us today. If only we would listen to Kara and other environmentalists, we would have the best of all worlds. Unfortunately, the biblical sins of greed and sloth are very much with our species to this day. It is frustrating when so many so-called people of faith act so contrary to the simplest dictates of their respective religions and ignore their own best interests and the best interests of our natural world. Greed, make money by trickery, and sloth. Be too lazy to actually go out and do something else. The American way at its best is that companies cannot keep up with the current needs of our country must fail and make way for new, fresh entrepreneurs. Unfortunately, those who would remain in business despite obsolete products have the clout to buy our public officials and remain in business by lobbying, inevitably at the expense of those entrepreneurs who would replace them and do a far better job. But I'm not complaining. Que sera, sera. What will be, will be. I will simply chronicle the demise. Our thought for the week, that is a whole new use for the term split ends. I used that one last week. Sorry, I didn't change it. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A. Next up, I hope, is Howard Sterman. I haven't seen him. I am Bob Levinsohn, chronicler of the demise. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle.
Keeping you company while you're working hard.